I've been looking forward to this all day. My guest is Jamie Benning. Jamie is the creator of Filmumentaries. If it's a phrase you're not familiar with, I'll get you to figure it out in just a little bit. First of all, Jamie, thank you very much for being here. How are you?
Hi, I'm very well. Thanks for having me on.
We're thrilled to have you on. Jamie, I myself consider myself to be a big film fan, but you've taken this to a whole new level. Explain for everybody what exactly Filmumentaries are.
They're a bit of a mouthful for a start.
They are.
What Filmumentaries are is I take the entire film. In this instance, I took Jaws, and I overlay it with interviews, both historic and current, of cast and crew members. I put in deleted scenes, behind-the-scenes footage, and kind of make the ultimate, well, what I perceive to be the ultimate making of documentary. So you get to watch the film, but you get to watch it kind of being made at the same time.
Now, Jamie, I'm curious, because I took a look at some of your work earlier today, and I'm amazed at what you do. But what was going on? Like, a lot of times when you buy a DVD of a movie, they'll do something similar. Why did you decide to take it upon yourself to go a step beyond all that?
Well, back in 2004, when they released the original Star Wars trilogy on DVD, it came with a pretty good documentary, but I just felt there was something missing. I felt that there were so many resources out there that could be used to make something a lot more interesting. So I set about doing one for The Empire Strikes Back, mainly for myself and also to teach myself some new editing software because I work in the TV industry. I just went about collating this thing together and realized that, you know, you can really push it a lot more. Not just have audio commentary, but have a visual kind of behind-the-scenes stuff as well, but also use of photographs, all the kind of footage that's available from all over the web, all over the many different documentaries, and collate it all together in one place and put it on that film timeline so that people can watch the film, but watch it as if it's new and fresh again.
I'm guessing, Jamie, that this is not inexpensive. I've looked at what you've put together, and I always think to myself, boy, he's spending some money doing this. Where does that money come from?
Well, actually, it doesn't cost a great deal.
No?
Well, I do. I mean, I've got my own, I have an iMac, and I have the software and all that kind of stuff already paid for anyway. What I should say about these projects is that they're completely unofficial. They have no endorsement from any of the production companies that own the rights to the films. But what I also always state is that I make absolutely no money from them. In fact, I lose money, you know, because I buy books, I buy magazines, I buy DVDs. So I'm losing money putting these together. And, you know, I get calls every day, I get emails every day. People say, oh, where can I buy this on DVD? But I never will sell it. You know, these are owned by the production companies. All the footage belongs to them, but this is just something I wanted to do as a kind of love letter to my favorite movies, really.
So it is. The phrase is sometimes said a labor of love. You're doing this because you're in love with the film industry, aren't you?
That's right. I mean, you know, I often say that, I often think as well that, you know, the stories themselves are fantastic. You know, Star Wars, Jaws, Indiana Jones, the ones that I've done, but the story behind the camera is just as interesting to me and always has been. You know, when I was a kid, Star Wars really was the reason I've ended up working in the television industry. You know, I would have preferred the film industry, but but it's a little bit harder to get into. But that's what spurred me on. And so many of my colleagues cite those films as the reason they got interested in what goes on behind the scenes, you know.
It's so funny. I've heard that same story over the years and people that I've interviewed. I always say, what was the turning point for you? And many, many times they'll say, as you just said, it was sitting in a dark theater when I was 14 years old and watching Star Wars. That's what made me realize I want to do that. And you're in that same category, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, I was born in 76, so Star Wars was out in 77, so I was a little bit young for it. But by the time the sequel, The Empire Strikes Back, came out, you know, the toys were everywhere, the T-shirts, the pajamas, the bedspreads, everything. I was completely entrenched in that world. And, you know, with Star Wars, it was one of those worlds where, you know, as a kid, you believed that somewhere like that could exist. You know, it was a very immersive kind of thing. And then as I got older, I got more and more interested in what went on behind the scenes and how did they make that spaceship do that and how did they animate that character or whatever it might be. And that's sort of where my interest led me into working in production.
Are you as excited as most Star Wars fans are about the news about the another trilogy coming our way?
Well, you know, I was excited back in the 90s when George Lucas announced that the prequels were going to be made. Like many original trilogy fans, I became very disillusioned with
that. Yeah, I'm in the same camp as you.
Yeah, and, you know, if it redeems the franchise in some way with these new films, then I'm all for it. But I'm not hugely excited. I think there's a certain amount of people like myself who think, you know, leave it alone, leave it where it is. But, you know, at the same time, it's quite exciting to see some of the original cast involved. Yeah, we've all got our fingers crossed at the moment.
Jamie, I read something a couple months ago that really rings true. Because those first three movies were just so mind-boggling and so original, and then the last three just kind of fell flat. I read somewhere on the internet where somebody wrote, the problem was that the movies we had in our heads of what those next three movies were going to be were so much better than the way those last three turned out. And that's kind of true. I think most of us with any kind of an imagination really envisioned something so spectacular, and it just didn't work.
Yeah, I think you know, for me, the original trilogy kind of left questions unanswered, and that's what you should do as a filmmaker, you know, if you're making a film of that kind. I think the problem with the prequels was it kind of pinned down everything, you know, and told you where everything started and told you how everything ends up and everything in between, and it took the mystery away for a lot of people. You know, for 30 years, we were able to imagine, well, you know, why is Princess Leia on this planet, and why is Luke on this planet, and why does Yoda live there, and why is Ben Kenobi hiding in the desert? All those sorts of things, you know, and they're all answered, and you just kind of go, oh, okay.
Now I know. Jamie Benning is my guest. He is the creator of Filmumentaries. His website is filmumentaries.com. There's a link on our Facebook page. If you go to the Bill Left Show on Facebook, you'll find an easy link to get there. We'll talk more with Jamie in just a moment. This is WGN. All right, we're all very excited here at WGN and all throughout the city of Chicago, and really maybe all throughout the country, if not the world or the galaxy. The Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup championship earlier this evening. We'll be talking a lot more about that as the show goes on and as the day goes on. Jordan Bernfield will be stationed at the airport as the Blackhawks are scheduled to arrive in a very short time. Listen in for that. Right now we're talking with Jamie Benning, the creator of Filmumentaries. His website is filmumentaries.com. Jamie, so far, how many of these have you completed?
This is my fifth one that I've just finished with Jaws, yeah.
Yeah. And is the goal to keep doing these? Like, what do you hope to crank them out once every couple of years, every year? What do you think?
Well, the last couple I've done in about 15, 16 months. You know, my ultimate aim would be to sort of grab the attention of a production company that wants me to do a filmumentary treatment on their film. You know, I sent a tweet out the other night saying that, you know, dear Universal, please let me do an official one on Back to the Future.
That would be great.
You know, another film that I'd really like to get my teeth into, and just being able to get access to all of that kind of stuff that's sitting on the shelf. That's the thing with these filmumentaries. The material is already out there for the most part. You know, I do some of my own interviews for them, as I've done with the Raiders of the Lost Ark one and this Jaws one. But there's so much material out there sitting on shelves in warehouses that could help me to put these things together. So there's potential that I may have got a contact at Universal via somebody online who's been very forthcoming. So you never know. You know, these kind of act as an online kind of CV, you know, to show a resume, as you guys would say, to show what I can do. So hopefully somebody notices.
Boy, I hope so, because you do such great work. When you contact somebody who's worked on these films, and, you know, some of these now we're going back 25 years or so, when you contact them and say, hey, I'm working on a filmumentary, what kind of response do you get? Are they ready, willing, and able to come and be interviewed, or how does that usually play out?
Yeah, usually they're very enthusiastic about it. I think that, you know, for the most part, I'm not just championing the main players and the director and the producer, but also the people that had a very small role in a film. But as you know, it's a huge collaborative effort, and I think that those people deserve to kind of have their voice as well. So, for instance, I spoke to a woman named Rita Schmidt, who was just an extra in Jaws, and she appeared in one scene where she stands next to Roy Scheider in the hospital scene and then walks past the camera. But she not only did that, she had a great experience because she was the girlfriend of the prop master on the film and was on set for so many of the scenes and saw all of the problems kicking off and all of the fun they had shooting the dinner scene where the props guy put real wine in the bottles instead of fake wine and they all got a bit jolly. So all of these stories come out. And you know, I've made some nice friends over email doing these things. And for the most part, people are just really enthusiastic and really happy, you know, all these years later to get their chance to tell their story.
Jamie, is the story that, I'll tell you, there's a story I've heard about Jaws for years and years and years, and maybe you can say if it's true or not. One of the things when people look back at that movie they say works the best is that Spielberg didn't show much of the shark until much later in the movie, but then they also say that the reason was the shark just wasn't working properly. He wanted to show it, he just couldn't show it. What's the truth in all that?
Yeah, it's interesting because you get all these different stories and you get all these different angles, and of course things over time get warped and changed to meet people's own sort of memories and you know, maybe false memories of these incidents. So it seems to me that it was a combination of the shark really not working and a realization from Spielberg actually that this would be, you know, a kind of a good excuse but to not show the shark too much. But I think from what I've heard on the grapevine talking to some of the big Jaws fans out in the U.S., is that for the most part, it was Werner Fields, the editor, who got much of the footage back and started editing it together and realized that, you know, it really couldn't crowbar too much of the shark in there. And she would, you know, Spielberg's been quoted as saying that Werner Fields would take off a frame here and a frame there, and the difference between those frames being there or not being there was the difference between it looking like a great white shark and a great white turd, you know. So I think really that there's no black or white answer to that question, really. I think it really probably was something that developed over time and has now become a, you know, a kind of convenient story as to why the film worked. You know, it's the same, I guess, for Ridley Scott with the Alien film. You know, I think he wanted to show the aliens some more, and there is some footage out there on the Blu-ray showing the aliens some more, and you know, within seconds your eyes kind of adapt to it and get to see that it's just a tall skinny guy in a suit, you know.
It's not as scary when you say it that way though, Jamie, you know that, right?
Exactly. I'm still scared of Jaws though, you know. I can still, even though I've watched it hundreds of times in the making of this filmumentary, I can still watch the film and particularly the bit where the kid gets attacked, you know.
Yeah.
It's still pretty gruesome.
And, you know, people don't realize this now about Jaws because it's been so many years, but I interviewed Mr. Zanuck, the producer, several years ago, and I said to him, this was the first summer blockbuster movie. Up until Jaws, the summer was kind of a dumping ground for movies that were just kind of teenager movies and it didn't have much acclaim, but Jaws was the first event film of the summer, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, researching for this film, you know, I found out some of the details about how the release date was kind of set, even though the script wasn't in place, the shark really wasn't in place. You know, much of the film was shot so out of order, you know, so non-continuity because of all these problems that they had, because they had to stick to this release date. So whether that was just a bit of foresight on the you know, on the side of Zanuck and Brown that realized that there was this potential to get something out in this usual dead spot, I don't know, but it's clear that they may have had a hunch or two.
Well, if you're a lover of film, you got to visit Jamie Benning's website. That's filmumentaries.com. You'll learn a whole lot of great stuff there. And Jamie, you're doing some fantastic work, so keep it up. All right,
thanks very much.
It was great talking to you.